Today in the Grave Talks, Ghost of Grandpa, a conversation with Wayne Seaton. As a child, Annie and every relationship is important. Once in a while, we truly find a connection with a loved one that we don't necessarily share with others. That was the situation for Wayne Seaton and his grandfather. Unfortunately, at a very young age, his grandfather would lose his life in a tragic shipping accident. However, the report of his death would not be the last time Wayne would hear a new story about his grandfather. He'd soon find that the caring, gentle person he knew in life was the same in death, and he was still hanging around the family home. This is only the beginning of his haunting story today on The Grave Talks.
My first memory of the paranormal was roughly when I was around 5-6 years old. My granddad was killed. He was a foreman of a shipyard in the town we lived. And he was killed by the ship building material when it all collapsed in on him.
Oh, wow.
He died at the scene. And shortly after, I can only describe a shadow person was in my bedroom, and I could clearly see from the outline that it was my granddad. My granddad had quite large ears and quite a distinct nose. And I instinctively knew that it was him. And I had a bond with my granddad that I didn't have with any other members of my family. He taught me to read before I even started school. So there was this bond there. And when I mentioned it to my parents would turn around and say, but that's because you miss him so much that your brain is telling you he is there. But this went on for 6 months, and every night I would see him there, and he would be just standing at the bottom of my bed. Sometimes he would sit down at the end of the bed, and then after half an hour or so, as far as I can remember, he would then just vanish, and that would be it. And my parents or my mum sat outside my bedroom door one night, and she was taking notes of what was being said. And it turned out I was having a full-blown conversation with whoever it was that was in my room. And one morning I'd gone downstairs and she said, I've been taking notes for the last 3 or 4 nights. Only last night you actually named who it was that you were talking to. And I said, what did I say? And she said, you said goodnight, granddad. And I'm like, okay, so it was my granddad I was talking to. And she said, as far as I can tell, looking at this conversation, yes, you were. And she took it. All of this information was given to a child psychologist. And he reported back that after hearing about the whole situation, he said, normally, if it's an imaginary friend or they're just dreaming, the questions and the answers would not relate to each other. They'd be broken. So it would be one question gets one answer, then another question that's not related to the first one would be asked, and then an answer would come through. And it would be sort of cut all the way through.
Yeah.
He said, but this is a fluid conversation. There's a question, an answer, then a question relating to the first one comes through, and so on for the whole conversation. Asking about things like how the family are, how are people doing, and it all related around that one particular subject. He said, so it's almost as if he is having a full-blown conversation with somebody in that bedroom. And that was it. That was it for me. And this lasted for 6 months, and then that was it. I never saw him ever again. Whether it's because I closed myself off to it, or he was satisfied that I was going to be okay. Because obviously I took it quite hard when I found out of his death.
Sure.
And it did upset me a lot. So I personally feel that he was just making sure I was okay. And once he was satisfied that I was going to be fine, he stopped visiting. And from then onwards, I always sort of had this connection with things. So I was always looking into and reading about local hauntings and well-known cases of hauntings like Borley Rectory on the Essex-Suffolk border. Mm-hmm. A very well-famous haunted location, which obviously doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm.
But before we go down that road of some of the things I started to look into, because I want to talk about that too, I want to ask a few questions about those experiences with your grandfather. Number one, when this began, when you first saw this shadowy figure and you identified it as your grandfather, obviously it wasn't quite the same as him, you know, walking into the house as he had in the past when he was living. You knew this was not him in a living form. Did you have any fear? What do you remember you were feeling initially? Not as you got more comfortable with this, but initially, what was going through your child's mind?
What was that? That was the only thing I could think of. What is this? Mm-hmm. It up to the point when I realized it was my granddad's, I didn't know what I was looking at. All I could see was this black figure. And it was quite scary to start off with, but it was almost as if someone had clicked a switch. Mm-hmm. And the fear had gone completely. And then when I looked properly, or, you know, obviously in the dark, in my mind's eye, my mind was telling me, that's granddad.
Yeah.
And the fear had just gone completely. It had gone from this black figure, which a lot of people, obviously, when they go out investigating and they see this black shadow, their first instinct is to be fearful of it.
Sure.
And that was how I felt.
Yeah.
But within seconds, something had told me there's nothing to be scared of. Mm-hmm. It's only granddad. And it was like I blinked and it became obvious of who it was. And that fear had just gone.
Do you remember having the conversations? Do you remember anything that was talked about?
No, I can't remember anything. The only thing I have that recalls any of the conversations was the papers that my mum had written on. She was quite good at shorthand, so she was able to write quickly down on the piece of paper what the conversations were about. And it was generally just asking about how the family were, how I was doing at school, or what I'd been doing at school that day, and saying giving messages to my grandma. My grandma would not have anything of it. She was a very religious person and she didn't believe in ghosts. So to actually relay a message from my granddad to my grandma was a bad thing to do. He was just asking how she was.
Yeah. At the time, did you, like let's say the next day you get up, did you remember what you talked about the previous night, or is it just over all these years you don't remember, you know, what those conversations were just because of time?
No, I honestly cannot remember anything from the following morning, which is strange, because I can remember my dreams.
Yeah.
And I've learned in the paranormal field and looking into all aspects of things like what dreams mean. You know, when they say that you can dream a certain thing and it would have relation to something in real life. And where I write my ghost stories, a lot of them have come from my dreams.
Yeah.
And I've woken up in the morning and I've like, oh, got to remember that. Write it down quick.
Yeah.
So I always have a notebook with me just in case something happens. But I can't remember any of the conversations I had. And for a long time, my mum kept this piece of paper with the shorthand on it.
Well,
I can't read shorthand, so I wouldn't know exactly what it says. But my mum translated it to me and said, you know, you'd basically been asking how the family were, what I'd been doing, was I going on holiday, give my love to grandma, and so on. And I'd be like, I couldn't say this to my grandma. She'd go mad if she found out I was talking to granddad.
Yeah.
And when the message got through to my grandma, my mum had told my grandma that I'd been talking to my granddad. Straight away, she went, no, I'm not having none of that. And she ended up going to church twice as much as she used to as a result.
Was she in fear that there was something else going on there? Was she kind of the viewpoint that in some religions where it's anything you're talking to that's on the other side is evil, even they're like in a different, you know, form trying to trick you?
Quite possibly. She wasn't all of that religious before my granddad was killed.
Yeah.
She sort of like go to church once in a blue moon. Every once in a while, she would go to church. But as soon as my granddad died, she was there religiously every Sunday without fail. She even tried to drag us children to church as well. But she never believed in ghosts.
Yeah.
And I sort of later on discovered that it was, in a sense, a bit of hypocrisy to believe in God, but not to believe in ghosts, even though the Bible clearly states about Holy Spirits and the Holy Ghost and things like that.
Sure.
And that, for me, I turned my back on going to church with my grandma simply because she didn't want to believe in ghosts. And I'm like, I've been talking to granddad. I got to believe in ghosts, but I can't go down that road because I had something against God for taking my granddad away. And the things I'd heard about what my granddad did during the war, my granddad never did any wrong to anybody. Mm-hmm. And I know he was naughty during the war, and he was sent over to the States. I think he was doing gun running or something. He had a torpedo. He was a commander of a torpedo boat. Mm-hmm. And I think he was stationed off of Florida and doing the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
Checking on gun runners, and apparently he'd seen a periscope, and it turned out it was a Japanese submarine.
Oh wow.
And it was reported it was blown up and destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
No survivors on the submarine, but if it hadn't have been for him, the Department of Defense were claiming that if he hadn't have seen that periscope, it could have led to another Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
And they wanted to give him a medal, but the British MOD said, no, you will not give him a medal because he's not supposed to be there. So my granddad was the sort of person that would do anything for anybody. And I've lived by the ethos that he went by. Yeah. And I'll do anything for anybody within reason.
Sure.
But there's a point that I won't go past. And so my granddad has sort of lived on within me.
Mm-hmm.
And to explain things to my nan was a big mistake.
Sure.
You couldn't really get away with it.
Sure. Well, I mean, it sounds like, too, his personality and death stays the same, which I think some people are kind of confused by that, but it makes logical sense where, you know, he was still very concerned about you and your connection and wanted to make sure that you were okay. So he was, if he were alive and dead simultaneously, he would do the same thing. It's like, that's just, it would just be his demeanor. Do you think the manner of death has anything to do with hauntings or a living person, you know, sticking around and becoming a spirit that then, you know, hanging out with family or friends?
I think sometimes depending on the situation and the manner, like you say, and the manner of death, I think if they've got unfinished business,
mm-hmm.
Like with my granddad, my granddad wanted to make sure that all his grandchildren were going to be okay.
Yeah.
And I was the youngest of four grandchildren. All the rest of them were like, I think my sister is 3 years older than I am. So her life was already sort of predetermined as such when he died. She was already sort of on that path.
Yeah.
And my other two cousins were older than my sister.
Mm-hmm.
So think the unfinished business there was me and the rest of the family being content with what we'd got. My mother was going through divorce with my real father at the time. And there was a lot of turmoil within the family. And then obviously with my granddad dying, there was a lot going on all at once emotionally, and the whole family was a wreck emotionally. And it took a while for me to actually say something because of I was fearful for what the reaction would be because of the emotional strain that everybody was under. I was worried that that was what was going to happen. So it wasn't until obviously my mum had sat outside my bedroom and started writing down on shorthand that I thought, well, my mum knows now that this is going on.
Yeah.
So it to me seems that because of the manner of his death, he wanted to make sure that we were going to be fine first before he moved on. And I think it was obviously after 6 months he realized, or the message had got through to him, that I was going to be okay. The rest of the family were going to be okay. And so he was able to move on. I think I'd like to think that he is watching over us still. I've had a few incidences in my life where technically I should have died and I haven't. And my mum has said, that's your granddad, he's watching over you. And everything that happens is it always somehow leads to my granddad watching over me. But I since have found out and discovered that it's not my granddad, it's someone else that is watching over me, which is quite a bizarre tale, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, tell me about that. I mean, so you kind of naturally would think, because he was there for that period of time right after his death, that, you know, maybe he's still the one that's there, just more, you know, elusive than he was in those first days.
Yeah, we did think that, you know, obviously after the 6 months, he'd gone.
Yeah.
And I never saw him in my room at night anymore. And years went by and nothing had happened. I'd had an accident on my push bike, and I thought I was Evel Knievel. And I went over a jump. My bike carried on going along the ground, and I didn't. I carried on going up. I eventually came back down head first into a rock. And I cut my head open in two places, lost a substantial amount of blood. And by the time they got me to the hospital, they couldn't believe that I was still alive, because apparently I was almost drained. I only had a few pints of blood left. And the doctors had said, we don't understand. We've given him extra blood.
Yeah.
And the amount of blood we've put in, he should have died before he got here. And my mum would go, your granddad's looking after you.
Sure.
Many years later, I started driving buses for a living with my parents.
Yeah.
And one particular incident, we had borrowed a vehicle from another company and the brakes failed. And I had no choice but to crash into the back of a lorry in front of us. And I was quite prepared to say, goodbye, world. Thanks for having me. See you later.
Yeah.
I closed my eyes, hit the back of the lorry, and I heard the glass smashing. And then I heard one of the passengers said, Wayne, are you okay? Wayne, are you all right? And I opened my eyes, and the front end of the bus had gone. All that was left was me and the steering wheel and my seat. And everything else from the front of the vehicle was behind me.
Oh, my God.
And I just went, I'm fine. I switched the engine off. I got out from behind the steering wheel, stood off the vehicle, and lit up a cigarette. Uh-huh. And the lorry driver came round expecting me to be dead. And they went, he goes, where's the driver gone? Where's the driver gone? And this passenger went, he's there, look. And he went, oh, my word, thank God for that. And the police and ambulance turned up. The ambulance had a body bag with them because they were told that there was a high velocity impact into the back of a lorry. They expected me to be dead. The police expected me to be dead. And when they turned up, there's me. He's smoking a cigarette and laughing and joking with all the passengers. Again, my mum had said, that's your granddad.
Yeah.
Your granddad's watching over you. He stopped you from being killed. And for a long time, I was quite prepared to believe that. And I moved into my sister's house. She moved off to Corfu in Greece.
Okay.
And I then opted to move into her house. And things kept happening in the house that I couldn't explain. So I would put keys down near the front door and they would end up near the back door. And I'd be the only one in the house, but they would move. I applied for someone to take on the spare room and they moved in. And one particular incident that stood out quite well, we were watching the TV show Most Haunted.
Sure.
And I'd said to her, "You're going to come in and watch the show with us?" And she went, "Oh, no, no, I don't believe in things like that." So I said, "Okay, fine." I said, "But be careful what you say about ghosts." "And what do you mean, what I say about ghosts?" And I said, "Well, you'll upset Joanne." And it was a name that just came out of my head for no apparent reason. And she went, "Oh, well, you know I don't believe in all that stuff." And she'd gone into the kitchen and she'd opened the cupboard and a tin of spaghetti came flying out of the cupboard, went straight past her head and hit the wall on the other side of the room. And by this stage, because of my interest in that paranormal, and I was a bit skeptical about certain things, I'm straight into the kitchen and I'm looking at the height of the dent on the wall on the other side of the kitchen to where it was in the shelf on the other side. And there was no difference in height. It was exactly the same height as it was on the shelf where the dent was. And this kitchen was about 20 feet across. And as we know, gravity dictates. And if anything's going to fly out the cupboard, it's going to eventually drop. But it didn't. It was at the same height. But the weirdest part was the can had landed back in the middle of the kitchen floor on its end, and it was upright. So you could actually read what it said on the tin. And my friend Sharon, she's standing there. She's gone as white as a sheet. She's like, "I never touched it. All I did was open the cupboard." And I just turned around and said, "That's what happens. You upset Joanne. She didn't like what you said." And she's like, "No, don't believe in that." And she walked out. And it must have been about 4 months later. She'd ordered some Chinese food and she always split it in half. So she'd have one part one night and one part another night.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd put it in the fridge. She put a tub of sweet and sour sauce on the top of it. And conveniently enough, it was a night when Most Haunted was being shown on TV. So I said, "Are you coming in? You're going to come and watch some ghosties?" And she went, "No, I'm going upstairs. Don't believe in it. I'm just going to reheat my dinner." She walked into the kitchen and she let out this almighty scream. And I heard the fridge door slam shut and a smash on the floor. So I've got up off and running into the kitchen. There's my roommate standing there. She's literally holding her hair, white as a sheet. "I didn't touch nothing." I said, "Not again." I said, "What have you done this time?" She said, I just came in here. She said, "I opened the fridge. The plate come flying out at me."
Oh, God.
Of course, the plate is now upside down on the floor. The plate's broken. Food's all over the place. I've opened the fridge door and the tub of sweet and sour sauce that she put on top of the plate was still sitting on the top shelf in the fridge where she left it. And I said, "Did you touch the plate or anything?" She said, "No, I just opened the fridge door and that come flying out at me and it actually hit her square in the chest and then landed on the floor." And it was, I think, about 2.5 months after that, she turned around and said, "I can't live here anymore." And she left. And I'm thinking she's had more experiences other than these two incidences.
Yeah.
And that scared her. So she's walked away from it. And of course, Joanne was the name that I kept getting. So I knew of a lady that lived nearby. That a girlfriend's mother had been to and said she was fairly good at what she did. And I got in contact with this lady and she said, don't give me no information. She said, I will catch a bus to Colchester, where I lived. I'll meet you at the bus stop and you walk me to your home. That way she got no information about where I lived, so she could do no research or anything.
Sure.
I met her at the bus stop. I walked her up the road. We went in through the back door, and she'd only taken two steps. And she said, Joanne. And I smiled at her, and I said, you know, Joanne. She went, yes. She said, but bear with me. She said, I will get a surname in a minute. So I'm okay. And she walked into the kitchen. She held out her arms, like to form a crucifix in a way. And she held her hands upright as if she was sort of doing a high five.
Okay.
And she just turned around and went, Bloomfield. Her name's Joanne Bloomfield. She's here. And I'm like, okay, so I didn't tell you who was here or what was here, but you've just given me her name. And she said, yeah, but she's not here for any other reason. She's here because of you. And I'm okay. Why is she here because of me? What have I done wrong? And by the end of the session, she'd actually come out with the fact that I was her dead husband. I had died on the beaches of Dunkirk and in the evacuation of Dunkirk at the start of the beginning of the war. And she died a year later, and she lived in that house. Her parents lived two doors down, and she was waiting for me to come home. And that explained all of the odd things that were happening inside that house. And I was knocked for six. And I ended up checking with the Hall of Records in our county hall.
Yeah.
And sure enough, at that point in time, she lived at that house with her husband, who joined the British Expeditionary Force over in France, and he died in the evacuations of Dunkirk. And she died a year later. And I was knocked for six. It was literally a home run. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And she turned around and she said, she's with you for life now. She won't leave you. Everywhere you go, she will follow you. And sure enough, we've moved twice. And every time we've moved, things have carried on happening every once in a while. And she'll do things to let us know she's there. And she watches over me, all four of my children, and my partner, Ellen. And the only time I know she's around is I will start getting a headache literally at the top of my spine, in the back of my head. I never get headaches anywhere else. It's always at the front I get a headache normally. But if she's going to be about, if Joanne's here, she will let me know by having given me a headache at the back of the head. And it won't last long. I don't have to take any tablets or medication for it. It's literally for about 30 seconds to a minute, and then it goes.
It's just like it's kind of there, and it's just like it's like almost like static electricity. It's almost, but you know, in the form of a headache.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Literally, her just going, like tapping the back of my head, going, "I'm here today. You know, I'm about."
Yeah.
And it normally happens when something is going to happen. So if I'm feeling stressed or I'm nervous about something, then normally I will get that warning sign to say she's watching over me, things will be okay. Which in the past we've put down to being my granddad. So we're now starting to look more along the lines of, well, maybe it wasn't my granddad all along.
Yeah.
It was Joanne. Or maybe my granddad left when he realized that Joanne was watching over me as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably gone, he's going to be fine with Joanne here. I'll leave him to it.
Now, I just want to understand how Joanne is viewing you, because she thought, so you in the under the understanding that she believed that you were her husband at the house?
Yeah.
Now, is this as in like, she was just confused as to who the male figure is, or as in you were the reincarnated version of her husband?
She knows I'm the reincarnated version. She sees me as her husband, Michael.
Okay.
But she knows obviously that Michael has passed.
Yeah.
And I come back in a different form.
And that's a that's what I was wondering.
But the thing is, she's quite happy that I've got a fiance. She's quite happy that I've got four children.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, she likes to watch over all of us rather than just me.
It's like there's a level of enlightenment on the other side with something like that, where it's not a sadness that the other is dead. It's not a sadness or a jealousy that, you know, they're reincarnated, but now they have a new love. It's like the sense of peace and just well-being and just care for another soul, no matter what form it may be in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, whenever I was on my own, you could tell there was a level of sadness there.
Yeah.
And whenever she did anything, it was like she would do something silly. You know, it wouldn't be anything nasty, like knocking things off the wall so that it would smash on the floor or anything. It would just be like something would be placed somewhere else.
Sure.
That would make me go, oh, where on earth did I put them keys? Or where did I put that mug? Where's it gone? Mm-hmm. It was there a minute ago. Why is it somewhere else? And it was almost like she was playing games to keep me amused and to keep my mind off of things.
Yeah.
And then when I met someone and I formed a new relationship with them, there was one person that she wasn't too happy with, and that was a very short-lived relationship.
Uh-huh.
But all of the others after that, she sort of seemed to sort of get on with without any issues.
But was that objection more so because of the personality of the person and not really a jealousy thing? It was more of a looking out for you, like this person's not good for you?
Yeah, it was. It was a looking out for me sort of thing. The person wasn't exactly, how can I put it? She was very all for herself.
Sure. Okay.
You know,
narcissistic.
It wasn't because of, you know, love for one another. It was more of a fact that I was quite happy to cook dinner and do the housework and then go out to work as well. And they just sat there and just watched the world go by.
Sure.
And I don't think Joanne was too impressed with that.
Mm-hmm.
And thought, well, you know, I can't have him being with a person like that.
Sure.
So I think I better call that quits.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Wayne. In part two, what unexplained and shocking experience did Wayne have at Borley Rectory? What was the history of Borley Rectory that made it such an active location? And what could the future hold as possible homes may be developed and built on this legendary, very haunted site? All of that and more in part two. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. That's how we keep the show on the air. Go to patreon.com, search The Grave Talks, or patreon.com/The Grave Talks, or go to thegravetalks.com. and click Become a Gravekeeper. You'll get access to all of our bonus episodes, advanced episodes of the show, and more. All of it commercial free. Check it out. patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.